you dropped a neutral observer into the world in the year 1500 at the turn of the 16th century and asked them to point out the most powerful nations and empires on the planet at that time, there's a few they would definitely talk about. They might talk about the Ming, who ruled vast swathes of land and people in China. They might talk about the Mughal Empire in India, built on conquest and militarization. Or the Ottomans and Persians in the Middle East, whose Janissaries had tormented Greece and the Balkans for centuries. Perhaps they mentioned the Inca or the Aztecs in Latin America, whose dominance was unchallenged. They definitely wouldn't mention Europe. Why would they mention Europe or North America? They were backwaters, irrelevant, obscure, fading into non-importance. But 350 years later, that same observer would talk about the growth of the British Empire, which ruled three-fifths of the world's population from a small damp island in northwestern Europe. The only rival to it was the French Empire, which had overrun much of Africa, or the Spanish Empire, whose conquistadors had obliterated the Inca and Aztecs. The Ming, the Japanese, the Indians, the Ottomans were no more, or were draining into the obscurity of history. So, the question we need to look at today is, where did the West come from? In the year 1500, they were nothing. In the year 1850, they were everything. Welcome to Poorly Informed Podcast, and we are going to be looking at the reasons for the West's development. So, I'm your host today, Theo. And with me are Will and Max. No Peter, because Peter has again gone on a pretentious holiday. It's not the first time this has happened in the podcast. Interestingly enough, he's making a bit of a habit of it. Perhaps we should permanently kick him. But very pleased to welcome you to the Poorly Informed Podcast. Hope you enjoy listening. Guys, we're going to do what we normally do. We're going to go around. If you each want to give a short summary of What reasons do you think there are for the West becoming the dominant power? And then we're going to go and explore those a bit further. Will, why do you think the West became dominant throughout that period?
The reason I think the West mainly became dominant is due to a lot of the geographical ways it's been set up. The West enjoys immense benefits with its geography, and I think it gave it sort of a kickstart that very few other places had, and this helping hand into an easier route to civilization and therefore colonization. So I think that's the reason, sort of the first reason, and you can, if you trace it, I know if you don't like playing the what this came before this, but this was sort of a foundational part of it, and I think it's a very, very important reason why.
Okay, fair enough. Max, your thoughts?
So my reason for the Western domination, you know, why it happened, is the desire for expansion and how that obviously led to colonization of North America and then later Africa and other places, and generally how the resources and power granted by this has led to the West being the most powerful area and so the most influential area.
So this sort of inherent desire to expand and to colonize and to explore, yes, is what meant, which you're saying that other empires didn't necessarily have?
Well, I'm not going to say that they didn't necessarily have, but then I'd have to fall back and support Will's argument a bit, and by saying the geographical position of Europe with it. Because if you look at expansion from Europe, you know, there's, you can go west, cross the sea to America, whereas if you're, say, the Ottomans, where do you expand as the Ottomans?
Okay, fair enough. And so my argument is that the fragmentation and the competition of European states meant they innovated, they created better weapons and developed better societies than rival empires, which had a monopoly on everything and just didn't bother to innovate or to compete. So, well, you're saying geography. Are you basically just copying Tim Marshall's argument in his book Prisoners of Geography and saying, oh, Europe was an amazing place for people to live, you had lots of everything going on and it was easy for them to develop?
Yes. I am, actually, pretty much. No, so I was reading this book in preparation for one of my other episodes. It's called Prisoners of Geography, and it laid out a few basic things about the geography of Europe. One of these being the Great Northern Plain, which is this big, big expanse of flatland running from northern France to Moscow. And it's areas like this that are very temperate. They're perfect environments for mass agriculture on a large scale. And also loads of rivers for transporting stuff. So it's a mixture of those things where you can create those things easily, transport things easily, and that is a fundamental reason why civilizations grow around rivers, because they can transport things. So that's why civilization grew up so quickly in Europe.
But is that not born out of the innate desire, as Max raised, to discover and to explore and to find new things? I mean, Max, you talked about how they just liked finding things and going different places. If they weren't pushing along those rivers, would that be worth anything?
True. I don't think it's out of a sort of, oh, I want to go see more stuff for the European sort of expansion. I think it's more for more power, more resources, more people. So, whereas when you get to, 1439, when Christopher Columbus discovered America?
14 it's later than that. 1491.
Great, good. Someone knows his stuff.
There's a rhyme, isn't there? The 19...
It was, yeah. You are correct. Uh-huh. I'm thinking of a different date or something else. Sorry, a second ago.
What happened in 1491?
Can't remember. See, I've already got it confused. So I don't think... It's not purely because they want to see more. It's they want the resources. They want the power. They want the money that comes from finding a new continent. Even Christopher Columbus, he wanted to find a new route to India. He wants to find a new route to the spice trade so that he gets to the dominance of other countries like Venice over the spice trade would have been lessened. So
you're saying competition with other states?
Yeah.
That drove the desire for exploration, that drove the fact that...
And also the geography. The geography that forced them to then push out across the sea and colonise new lands.
That is a weak... No, I think there's a more convincing argument to be made from the fact that because Christopher Columbus wanted to end the Portuguese monopoly on spice, he went the other way, because he didn't have one European country, he had all these different countries trying to get cheap goods, but good goods. And so if Portugal had been the one country in Europe, that wouldn't have happened. They wouldn't have discovered America.
But there wouldn't have just been one country in Europe if it wasn't for the geography that allowed there to be this intense competition, because you had multiple places where very rich, very productive societies could be produced. It's not like China, where you just end up with kind of this one massive centralised state that's trying to defend itself from the northern hordes. It's you grow up with these lots of little fiefdoms and kingdoms that grow up.
I'm going to take the view that I take on lots of things of radical centrism. I'm going to take a middle ground.
You're
here.
Not radical, you're lazy centrism at best.
Middle ground. So I'm going to say, yes, partly due to the geography, and going to include natural resources in geography and how there was a lack of certain natural resources in Europe that, especially going to America, greatly benefited from going to South America, all that gold and stuff, because Europeans like gold. There's also the fragmentation and sort of the competition within Europe. However, Theo, you're talking about there being lots of different countries. You know where else there's lots of different countries? Everywhere on the planet. Why was it specifically Europe? Why not all the Africa? In Africa, there's lots of different independent countries. Why not South America, where there are all those independent... North America, lots of independent tribes. Japan, which was lots and lots of independent small states. Why didn't they go over to America, which is closer than we are to the east coast of America?
No, that's
Japan
not
is to the west,
true.
West, north, east, south. Yeah. No. Japan, right? If you go to Alaska, right? That is shorter distance.
Yeah, but when we talk about discovering America, we don't mean discovering the northern frozen bit. We mean discovering...
No, Alaska.
No, but Theo, if you look at that map, it cuts off.
No. The Pacific is the biggest ocean in the world. Like... No, Britain is closer to North America than Japan is, definitely. Because it only takes you, 5-7 hours to fly to New York? From Japan, it'll take you 10 hours to fly to California?
Well. Anyway, what I was saying is, something, they still could have done it.
Okay, well...
Why didn't they do it?
Because,
that's not what my point rests
on. Europe effectively have what Japan didn't. It got lucky in the sense that because it was bordered by competitor empires, so Japan was isolationist, okay? Two times it had tried to be invaded by the Mongols had lost in the Divine Wind and the Kamikaze that the Japanese often reference in their history. Europe however, faced constant competition, faced constant war against the Ottomans, occasionally the Russians, occasionally the Persians. Okay, it constantly had to develop and compete. And so it had lots of smaller countries that were all often on a war footing, often trying to muscle in with each other. But in contrast to Africa, they were richer and more developed because they could trade with each other because they were in closer proximity. In Africa, for instance, there are more inhospitable places.
Geography.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I've seen the trap and I've got no option but to walk into it. But Africa's more inhospitable. South America, the Inca was separated from the South American lowlands by the Andes. Whereas in Europe, as Will mentioned, you've got the Northern Plain, you've got the ability to trade with each other, which means smaller societies can become more prosperous rather than languishing in low-developed communities. So I think that gives them the resources and the innovation necessary to explore. End point.
But then, for instance, with China, if we point that out as a specific example, I know there's not loads and loads of small states fighting for supremacy, but there is this one large state fighting against one large enemy and often against itself for this period of wars that lasts sort of hundreds of years, when you have the Mongols and then the successor states and other Khanates and then the other dynasties. So that it's not like there's a complete lack of competition. It's still there.
No, but China, broadly speaking, had the resources to fight off those invaders or would just submit. Europe, you've got lots of city-states and smaller states constantly agitating for competition. Okay, because they're all smaller, it's very hard for one to invade the others. So you've got this constant balance of power. As soon as one Italian city-state got a new type of weapon, all the other Italian city-states would also upgrade in order to preserve the balance of power in northern Italy. You see what I mean? There's this conscious balance of power going on in Europe. Whereas in China, while China, yes, often broke and then renewed, you had this conscious sense of Chinese identity. You had the fact that it was large enough and resource-rich enough to pull itself back together again and fight off eventually the Mongols or assimilate them. Whereas in Europe, you don't have this. You've got independent nations, as I mentioned, Italian city-states, which are always agitating to be the best, which are always then being taken down by their competitors because they want a balance. They don't want, like, France invading everyone. They don't want the Habsburgs dominating everywhere, although they eventually do.
But then I would also go and say, well, a lot of that is due to the geography, because the reason... China often faced inwards and faced north against the Mongol hordes, against these steppe people who would periodically invade, occasionally win, occasionally lose. And they were doing this because they have this massive northern border that's a lot of it is just flat land. Not all of it, obviously, there's the Himalayas as well. But when you're in a position where you can be invaded from the land very easily by very big other powers that can just sweep you aside across a border of thousands of miles, you have to look towards that border. You can't look out towards the ocean. I was reading the source earlier that was saying if the Chinese had wanted to expand in the 600s AD, they could have had a reasonable way of... they could have started some very basic colonization way back then. Whether that's 100% true and they would have been able to do that, I don't know. But instead, they turn themselves to face northwards, to face these tribes. And but that's due to the way the country is positioned among other... among the geography.
So effectively your point comes down to the fact that Europe at its basic level has excellent geography and therefore that helped propel its development.
Yes. I think it ties into the other things and does support them, but I think the reason the other, like, I agree broadly with your two points being correct, but I think the reason behind it is the geography.
But I think that's not an accurate statement, and the geography statement doesn't always apply, because for instance one of the few places in the world that has superior geography to America to Europe, Tim Marshall writes, is the United States of America, is North America. And as we all know, when Columbus sailed to America, he found a highly industrialised society that was well organised and well met. No, he didn't. He found tribes of Native Americans. So it shows that actually geography isn't everything. It depends on the people who live there. It depends on the development of nation states within that geography.
But there was something quite key missing from America, which isn't the geography, I will admit. It is slightly different, but for horses... they were lacking in horses and lacking in an animal that you could very easily domesticate and used to... I mean, horses have a monumental impact on human history. They're tied into us in such a sort of an important way. It's,
what about the Romans?
They had horses.
Yeah, but they relied largely on heavy infantry.
But horses, in terms of... You still have cavalry in battles. Cavalry can still win you battles. But then the trade. And then all of Europe in the Middle Ages was... These giant cavalry charges.
Nope, that's not true, because by the end of the Middle Ages and the Reformation, the Italians had developed the crossbow tactic, where they basically just shot crossbows at the enemy and protected them with pikes, so you couldn't charge
with
then, cavalry.
If you're then a farmer and you want something to, I mean, pulling plows with. But does America have something similar that it can domesticate in order to fulfill that function?
I think people riding buffalo around.
No, that's true. I'm being petty. You're right.
And I think that is a. Why there isn't a horse, I can't tell you in America. I'm not an expert on biology or anything like that. But that is another key component of it. And it's these natural conditions which the humans grew up with that I think shape them more than the people themselves.
In which case, I mean, you're effectively saying that the horse is part of it? Is the horse geography?
Well, it's the environment that a society grows in, I think.
But the horse came from India.
Yes.
And the steppes of Kazakhstan.
Yes, but how long had it been in Europe? Like, when did it reach Europe?
I don't know. And I don't actually know.
Well, a couple, like, probably, I don't know.
A long time.
Multiple thousands BC.
Yeah.
So it really has no impact that where it came from, as long as it wasn't in America, because they can't swim across the sea.
Max, can't you see he's got an overwhelmingly good point? Okay, we need to work against it. Okay, we've actually tried to think outside the box, and he's just gone for the easy one.
Excuse me.
Okay, so the West. One of the reasons the West becomes really dominant is because it becomes a military power. Am I right in thinking that? And I think geography alone can't make it be a military power. Okay, you've got to talk. So the people themselves, the development of nations themselves, has a big impact on that. Okay, you, like we talked about the geography in North America. Geography, you conceded yourself, Will. Geography alone doesn't go the full distance. Okay, Paul Kennedy writes in his book, for the explanation of this shift, so the West becoming the dominant military power, one must point again to the decentralisation of power in Europe. As I mentioned earlier, any time anyone got a nice new cannon, everyone else would then buy loads of that cannon as well to equal the power. You didn't just have one mine, the centre of an empire, producing the materials needed for a cannon. You had factories and foundries in Sweden, in central Germany, in France, in Italy, and so on. You couldn't control all of the supplies for cannon and firearms. Okay, so this meant that all the countries were now locked in an arms race with each other, a primitive form of an arms race, Kennedy again writes. And so, again, geography is important, but again, geography doesn't go the whole way in explaining that all these countries are locked in with each other, competing to become the best military power, which eventually results with England and Wales, as an isolated island state, being able to develop huge military power in developing broader, solid ships that can take cannons and therefore outgunning anything else in the waves, setting the way for the British Empire. And that came out of the arms race built by the decentralisation of Europe. And that in itself is what caused the arms race, not the geography. Although the geography was a factor.
Well, I mean, I hate to sound like a broken record, but I would then just, my response to this, which is going to be painfully generic, would be the decentralisation was caused by, was in large part due to the geography.
But you can't say, okay, well, you know, that if we put a fort on that hill, that means it's an impenetrable fort, it's impregnable. You know, nothing is going to get into that fort. Well, no. You know, the people that man the fort, the way the fort is built, are all critical factors in that, in the success of that fort defending a key position.
Yes, but if you look at the, say, compare two major nation states in Europe, the French and the Spanish, they have a natural border between them. But both are relatively prosperous lands. You can build a decent civilization both either side of the Pyrenees, but you still have this natural border.
I would critically disagree with that, because the Spanish and the French are always fighting with each other, and the French are overrun by Muslim invaders for much of the 1300s and 1400s.
Yes, but you have this natural border where, as the ebbs of flow in history come and go, you still end up with this difficult-to-penetrate border that will probably end up as the basis between two. The powers on one side are generally going to have less influence on the other side than the powers that be on the other side. It leads to a natural place for two countries to split. And there are other examples of this. The various rivers, the Danube, for instance, was the border of the Roman Empire, the Alps between France and Italy. And you get these natural borders with good land on either side that create conditions allowing two both prosperous but separated powers to grow.
So to what extent would you explain, would you say that geography was responsible for Britain's policy in the 1800s of not letting any one European power be more powerful than it was itself? Because that wasn't really related to geography.
Well, when it comes to something like that, I'd just say that the geography sort of... the geography is connected to the foreign policy through so many different steps. In which case there's so many
other factors involved, yeah. It begins to become redundant as a factor.
You build a house, you take out the foundations, it comes crumbling down. When you have a key factor,
it just sits there. It just takes a lot of wear and tear to break it down. That's a terrible analogy.
You can't say that. So what you're saying is that there were mountains which were natural divides between countries, and that meant that they got powerful and conquered the world?
Well, it means you have situations where you can have powerful civilizations next to each other that won't necessarily overwhelm the other one.
But they were, like, almost constantly.
Yeah, well, they were almost constantly at war, but it didn't... But the layout of the geography meant it was difficult for a single power to take over the entire...
Because those borders are not... The borders that we have in modern days are not the historical borders.
No.
And you always have certain countries expanding or getting smaller.
And for instance, the French-German border, which is a massively important border in modern European history, is just on some flat land west of the Rhine. There's nothing important about the land of the German border. Why is it there? Okay, that's not to do with geography. That's to do with other things entirely, like the balance of power in Europe, which is related to the decentralisation of power, because there's no big empire in Europe. They're always competing. Therefore, they need to find a neutral border which is not on a strategically advantageous point for either of them.
Yes.
Yeah, that's my point. Therefore, in that particular scenario, geography has no impact. Okay, it's actually related to the fact that they're both trying to have equal amounts of power in Europe, and they're both trying to maintain their power status in Europe. That's where they settled the border after World War II, for instance. They didn't want to punish Germany so severely that it died and never became a power again. They needed Germany with the potential to become powerful once more, so they settled the border there to allow them to become powerful again, so you didn't get a centralisation of power like you do with the United States and North America.
But then also with that, Germany was very much the gateway for this northern European plane to the Warsaw Pact powers. And there's this area in northern Poland where the North European plane comes in sort of a bottleneck. It's only about 300 miles across. And if you're an invading army from either side, that's where you go through, because it is flat. You can drive tanks straight through there and you'll be fine. So that was the focus of Russian foreign policy for a long time, was to ensure that that small gap was controlled or at least influenced by them. So if they could, they could stop an army at that point
rather than 2,000 miles. Inconsequential, because Russian foreign policy planning for a World War III never happened. Like, that makes no... I mean, that's a decent argument, but for this fact that Russian foreign... Like, there was no World War III.
Wait,
that's irrelevant.
Well, we're meant to be talking about colonisation. I just realised, how have we got to Russian foreign policy in the
1960s? Jumped 550 miles ahead.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Well, all I'm going to say is, I'm going to slightly change mine, because I realised that, yes, it is basically a combination of your two arguments. Is I'm going to talk about the culture, and this way he's going to say, but the geography led to development of culture. No, no, no.
led to the development of the culture.
No, I'm talking about how the culture of... wanting to expand, the culture of wanting to... So religion have a part of it, wanting to expand and spread your religion to other places in the world, and sort of the threat from other religions, such as Islam with the Ottomans. Not that... Well, obviously partially, but not massively, led to the desire to expand across the Atlantic.
I mean, I'd also actually have to sort of slightly agree with Max there. If you look at something like the Crusades, it is a motivation to go and invade a foreign power, seemingly just motivated by an ideology, whether there was other factors in there, of course there were, but on the surface, it looks like an ideology is just focused on spreading, which is not something you necessarily see elsewhere. So yeah, I agree, that could be a fairly major factor. But I would say, is it enough to propel an entire continent into spreading out? It is just purely
possibly,
ideology.
Because that's why you have Jesuit monks in China in like the 1600s, because they wanted to be missionaries. And that's how you establish the first European trading missions in China through monks and through Jesuit missions, yeah. For instance.
You have, so as I mentioned earlier, the trade. I reckon that's partially a cultural thing, not quite sure. The desire to want more and to, like, greed. So you want more, you want more for your country, you want to undermine your competitors. Don't talk, Theo. So you want to try and find these alternate routes. So you want to find other routes to the Indies. You want to find extra trade in South and North America, and, you know, gold and then slaves from Africa, which I'm not going to say wouldn't have happened if there was less of a culture around, you know, expanding and increasing power. But I feel like that's still a major driver of European sort of decision making through the 15th to the 18th, 19th century.
That is a fairly conclusive point. But for the fact that the reason why we went to America really was, as you say, for exploration. Yeah. The reason why we went to China and India was motivated by financial drive. So we're talking from a British standpoint here. By financial drive, desire for more land, desire for resources, in order to compete with their French and Spanish neighbours.
Yeah.
In order to, because the French and Spanish were more powerful than them, so Elizabeth thought, right, let's raid Spanish ships, let's establish settlements on the east coast of America, let's set up the British East India Company, let's set up trading in the Baltic, let's, you know, go and get loads of money coming in from places. If you hadn't had this interstate rival, okay, those early opportunities wouldn't have been fully exploited. And that is something Europeans were very good at. When they went somewhere, unlike the Ming or the Indians, they stayed there and exploited all the resources possible. Cod fisheries off of Newfoundland, Atlantic trading routes, slaves in Africa. They weren't there to faff around. They got everything they could in order to enrich their own gain, go back, develop their city-state, their nation-state as a powerhouse in Europe. Then that drove rivals to do the same thing, and suddenly you got this boom of exploration going on.
My whole thing is that geographical and close rivalries are not a, they're not a European-specific thing. Neither is having geography that splits countries up. I'm still confused as to what Will's trying to say. that none of them are specific to Europe. You have them in other parts of the world.
They're more
specific. So therefore, they're not the only cause of this.
Where else would you say you've got such a similar fragmentation of nations? Because in the Ming Empire and the Japanese Empire and the Indian Mughal Empire and the Ottoman Empire, you've got this stagnation, you've got leader in charge. The weapons, the cannons they have are enough to suppress protest or neighbouring countries. Why do they need to innovate? They don't need to develop anymore. There was no other innovating, developing, conflicting society in the world like Europe. That's why you have the Reformation and the Renaissance, although that's slightly before. But you have this hotbed, this intense crucible of ideas and transformation going on, which you don't find in the stagnant monopolies of the Ming Empire or the Japanese Empire or the Aztec Empire.
However, I'm going to go back, I'm going to do Will's tactic of saying, but mine caused that. I'm still just going to ignore Will and say, it's not the geography that caused this, because there's geography everywhere.
There's geography everywhere.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that is how geography works.
So what you're saying about there being this competition and there's being this close, lots of different small states, lots of states in a small area competing for land and influence, that is a culture, that I reckon that is a cultural European thing. Because although it is, there are, you know, areas in the rest of the world where there are lots of different states, however, they seem to not be as, they don't seem to be as conflict driven. So obviously, like gunpowder and stuff we got from China, and yet the European powers were the ones that that turned it into the instrument for war that it is similar to today. So it's not that there wasn't any conflict, there weren't any small states in the, or small, there wasn't, it's not that there weren't any areas with lots of small states competing, it's just they weren't competing to the same extent that they were in Europe at that time.
Okay, it's time to start wrapping up. Obviously a short episode than normal, we've not got Peter, and also we all, normally there's a little bit of give and take on this, but we all genuinely firmly believe, you know, or at least that yes. The other people are wrong yeah. In this particular
I think it's a circle. It's like the, I was going to say the Holy Trinity, but no, that's
a triangle.
Yeah, yeah. I realised that. Nor is it a circle. So what you got is you've got the geographical thing, which yes, may have contributed to the the thing of there being lots of different states, which then contributed to the desire to expand. How the desire to expand is due to the geography, and then it just goes around the circle. So let's just say we're all right.
What I'm getting from this is that your 2 points are just because of my point, and
it depends where you start the circle.
But you have to start the geography because we didn't invent civilizations that expanded before there were, I don't know.
No, I disagree.
Now the borders are all different now, though, so it can't simply solely be because of geography.
I disagree on the geography, and on that note, we are going to have to finish. Well, actually, are there any other, maybe you don't believe in yourself, are there any other ideas or thoughts that you've come across in researching, I say in air quotes, this topic? So there's one school of thought that says where Christianity goes, economic dominance and military dominance follows, which maybe it's correlation rather than causation. But if you follow the centre of Christianity from the Middle East to Europe to America and now to China, that's where the power in the world tends to be.
Causation or correlation kind of thing. I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting way of putting it. One thing I've heard about is something called a book called Guns, Germs and Steel.
I've got to read that book.
Yeah, which I've heard very, very mixed things about. Some people think it's great and some people think it's sort of been thoroughly debunked. And essentially the premise of it was that the conditions in Europe, because we had guns and because we had cities that allowed us to sort of create diseases in these cities that were incredibly common, but that wouldn't cripple our population, as well as our access to natural resources, just kind of made it us unstoppable.
Okay.
That's a very poor summary. I do recommend you go out and read it if you have not. I haven't, so I should, but yeah. I've heard many things about that, so that's one possible influence.
Yeah, so that's another book. So Prisoners of Geography by Tim Marshall, Guns, Germs and Steel. Max, you don't read, so no recommendations there.
Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows.
Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, and I've got a really good book that I've sort of read called The Rise and Fall of the Great Powers, which is by Paul Kennedy. So I'd recommend reading that as well if this is a topic you're interested in. But thank you very much for listening from me, Theo, Max and Will. We've got a slightly more informed episode coming out. Well, it came out last weekend. We hope you enjoyed it. Let us know what you think. That's going to be that. Hopefully that's Will. You talk about Russia in that one.
Yes.
If you haven't heard that, go back and listen to it.
Northern European plane is mentioned in that plenty of times, assure you.
There you go. You're linking topics across. Yeah, and we've got some big topics coming up in the next couple of weeks. We're talking about World War One next week, and then we are finally having a discussion about religion several weeks in 2 weeks from now.
We are very much hoping that won't be the end of this podcast. We've all murdered each other.
Yeah,
but we'll
that will be quite interesting. But thank you for listening. If you want to get in touch, as always, Max.
So the Instagram and Twitter is at podcastpaulie.
Will, do you know the email?
PaulieInformedDiscussion@gmail.com.
And that is all from us. Have a wonderful whatever time of day it is where you are. You will hear from us next time. Thank you.
Goodbye.